Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thank organizer for this invitation. And yeah, so this meeting is supposed to be about hippocampus mainly, but fortunately or unfortunately, I'm not really working in hippocampus. So my main interest is neocortex. And because probably many of you, I'm kind of a stranger.
Can you speak a little bit louder? It's
Louder, okay.
There's an air conditioner back here. A fan
Ah,
back
I
here, it's
see.
hard to hear.
So just brief introduction. Actually, I'm in Nature a theoretical physicist. I got PhD here. I'm not here in theoretical particle physics. Then somehow I was interested in brain science, so I shifted to statistical physics of Hopf field network. So because Hopf field network is supposed to represent, kind of describe CS3 recurrent circuits. And so in that sense, I started my study in neuroscience in hippocampus, something related to hippocampus. But this is still a very theoretical model. Then I further shifted to more biological network models and also started to collaborate with some experimentalists. This is not my laboratory, and this is a so-called izakaya in Japan, a very casual drinking place, but I have only this photograph for member. So mainly I talk, so this person is doing experiments, and I'm going to talk mainly about the result of this person, but most others are just theorists. So he's always alone and lonely. Yeah. So I start from this very classic type of argument. So brain is often compared with computer. And that's partly I was interested in this kind of science. So computer, this is actually K computer, just recently Liken made, and it's very fast, petaclass computer, but still it uses traditional binary representation. And although a lot of parallel process going on, but each process are actually serial. And and on the other hand, brain is represent information by spike sequence, and traditionally, brain is considered to be a machine of parallel, heavily parallel distributed thing. But more recently, I think many people are interested in this kind of aspect. So here, a computer computations are deterministic, and usually noise are not good for computation. But the brain is more uses probabilistic inference, and there are lots of evidence for that. And also, learning is reward-based. And another aspect which is interesting from viewpoint of engineering is the brain uses very high energy, but another computer's uses energy consumption is very high, but the brain is very ecological. And so, just brief explanation on these aspects. So how noise is actually useful in brain's information processing is already discussed long time ago, 1993. So subject called stochastic resonance was very popular. And I was a physicist, so I was very much interested in this phenomena. And if I ask which pictures are most easily understandable, I think everyone agrees this one. It's easy to recognize, right? This is Big Ben. And here, actually, original picture is this. But if you add some noise here, then visual system works better. But if you put too much noise, again, visual recognition becomes worse. And this is related to the latter part of my seminar, but this is the first time that I saw that some noise are important in brain. And more recently, many people are interested in noise or stochastic computation or stochastic sampling from viewpoint of Bayesian inference. I think many of you already No, already, many of you already know this, but just brief summary is, so what brain is doing is, so it receives some sensory input, okay, then some activity occurs, response occurs, but brain wants to know what kind of stimulus they received from the response. So the interest quantity to calculate is this conditional probability. So given response, what is the stimulus? What was the stimulus? And the Bayesian theory tells you, I mean, this can be computed by this. This is response for given stimulus, and this, of course, is determined by the nature of brain circuit. And this is, we call it prior knowledge, so about, it's a knowledge about all possible sensory events. Maybe this will be generated by brain itself through experience, and this is a response, probability of response that again can be calculated from these two quantities. So basically, if we are given these two, then we can now calculate this one. But actually, how to calculate prior is the most difficult part in many application. So obviously we cannot describe, for instance, if we ask to describe the construction or organization of knowledge of past sensory events, we cannot tell them. I cannot tell what is the possibility I give a mistake in the next moment, but this somehow is necessary. But so in many engineering application, we just assume all events might occur with equal probability. That is the most simplest assumption we can make. But anyway, and also now there are some evidence that some people say that, so prior is actually the internal model of the external one. And some experimentalists claim that the spontaneous activity, yeah, cortex shows very irregular firing or spontaneous activity, and this spontaneous activity actually gives a prior, so that these people, Berkes et al. Showed, claimed it in Science in 2011, but there are several controversial arguments. Some people say that spontaneous cortical activity is not related to any experience, or so this idea is still not very conform, but still gives us very interesting idea. I do not want to going to talk this here, but so this is why stochastic computation or noise is interest in brain science. And so another point. So I told you that the computer is very energy consumption, waste a lot of energy. For instance, this K computer uses this much megawatts. And this is equivalent to the energy consumption used by 30,000 families in Japanese families. So there was a lot of argument about whether there is really benefit to have this kind of supercomputer by wasting this much energy. And but anyway, we made it. And why? I'm not the expert of computer, but I can easily imagine why this is so energy consuming, because so obviously computer requires clear representation of 0 and 1, and which electrically is represented by some gap, voltage gap. And I asked the computer engineer, and he said that on average, modern computer uses 1.5 volt to represent this. Previously, it was about 5 volt. You need at least sufficiently large gap to avoid any noise, influence of noise. But energy is square, proportional to the square of this energy gap. So this voltage gap, so it costs a lot. On the other hand, as you know that neurons, threshold for firing is just 20 millivolt. It's very small. And but that means that neurons cannot avoid influence of noise. So I believe, I cannot show you how it occurs right now, but I believe that noise, brains uses noise very actively. Actually, the brain's computation should be somehow based on stochastic computation or sampling. And that, I think, is also good for represents this environment, which is full of noise. So my talk is consists of two parts. One is neural population dynamics in probabilistic decision making. This is purely, almost purely experiment. And here, so I talk about sequence of activity in millisecond range. Then the second part, I talk about some mechanism, possible mechanism to generate such sequence. Yeah. These two are not directly linked, but I believe there are some underlying relationships. Then why we chose Agnira AGM, so I call it AGM, so there are long history about AGM. So we know that AGM receives afferent from sensory, especially auditory cortex, and sends afferents to motor areas, including M1, spinal cord, and brainstem. And there are also lesion study. So AGM, anatomical study. So AGM is reciprocally also connected with medial-dorsal motor thalamic nucleus. And lesion study said that unilateral inactivation impairs sensory-based movement selection. So so AGM is kind considered to be a locus of sensory motor transformation. Yeah. And this is relatively recent one. So these people measured activity responses of many prefrontal areas and found that during value-based decision making, so AGM shows earliest activity. So of course, this doesn't may not ensure that AGM is the center of decision making, but people expect these people claim that AGM basically is first center of decision making. So anyway, we decided to record from it. So this is another answer to your question. So anyway, we are interested in, so when rat make choice is one interesting question. And what we try next is, so let's say this is a population activity, trial by trial population activity for left choice and right choice, and that would be kind of scattered in higher dimensional space. But there is a lot of way to separate these two groups of data by, let's say, linear hyperplane, okay? Support vector machine or official linear discriminant or whatever it is. There are many, many methods for this. So I basically took this Fisher's linear discriminant. And the idea is very simple. I mean, this is one standard method in machine learning. So if there is a data, and I want to separate this blue from red, then if I project this data onto this surface, this surface, then data looks something like this. But there are overlap. Two data are significantly overlap. So this separation is not good. And but if I choose this hyperplane for separation, something this, then data, actually this is this line is a normal vector of the hyperplane we choose, and on this normal vector, these two data, projected data, are separated clearly then apparently this one is better than this one. So the Fisher's linear discriminant is just to a method to find out optimal hyperplane that separate two data. Yeah. And so I just applied it to our data. So it's very simple idea. So I think many of you are already familiar to so-called discriminability. So average distance and maybe variance, cross variance. So basically, this try to maximize average distance between class variance and simultaneously minimize within class variance. And so the solution is well known. Is it clear?
So I was wondering which sigma goes in the denominator there when you say with the within class variance. Should it be class 1 or class 2 or the mean variance? Or?
This is a total variance. Totally variance,
total variance
of these two data sets. Yeah. So some of the within class variance of the two data sets.
Okay, thank you.
And this value is maximized when this is small and when this is large. So I want to, so sequence, actually sequence interests me a lot. Yeah. And I just want to show you, this is computational, so, but just, so I will show you a possible mechanism to sequence generation. And actually there are lots of evidence in hippocampus or neocortex that sequence exists even before learning. Yeah. So I took this from Tonegasan's paper, because this is a hippocampus people. And so this preplay is very famous now. What he found is, so there are two tracks, familiar tracks and novel tracks. And so.
George was just talking last week.
Oh, I see. So I can skip this. Yeah, okay. Anyway, what he observed is, even before that experience, novel arm, already sequence activity appears during resting state of familiar track or something like that. But somehow ordering, order of the sequence are sometimes reverse and sometimes forward. This is an interesting phenomenon, but this shows the sequence already exists. And also, I forgot, in somatosensory cortex, I believe, some people, Lukzak, they show that somatosensory neurons show sequential response, a spontaneous response, even before sensory experience of sensory input. After repeated experience, the sequences are associated with some particular sensory information, but sequence itself exists. And yeah. One possible idea I want to say is maybe some of you already know that. Yeah, but anyway. So now many people, there are several people, so several groups found cortical networks are not random in many sense. Wiring pattern is not random. And also, this is a kind of synaptic conductors, let's say, or EPSP. The size of EPSP is also not random. Actually, if size distributions are random, we expect kind of normal distribution, Gaussian distribution. But if you measure the conductance of synapses, it obeys log normal distribution. Here, so this scale of coordinate, abscissa is not the normal scale, it's log scale. So distribution actually looks normal when you use this log scale. Yeah. So this is called log normal distribution. And the message is Very simple. So many neurons, actually average is somewhere here. Many neurons are not neurons. Many synapses are very weak, but some very minority of synapses are really strong. And this is actually from hippocampus, and this from Ikegaya's group. And they also found the long tail distribution in normal scale. And if you use introduce log scale here, then again distribution looks very kind of log normal. Yeah. And this data is from CS3. And this is somatosensory cortex. So we were interested in the implication of this. And so we just make a network model. Yeah, this model is intended to explain spontaneous activity of neocortex. Yeah, it is known that cortical spontaneous activity is very irregular. And also firing rate is very low, typically 1 Hz or even less than 1 Hz. But in modeling, to explain that kind of extremely sparse firing, irregular sparse firing, is very difficult. Because to maintain activity, you need some kind of coincident or synchronized inputs. But this synchronized input easily drives cells to very high frequency range. Typically, it easily reaches to 100 or even more. And one possibility is to introduce slow synapses like NMDA. Then maybe activity becomes around 10 Hz or something. But still explaining activity of 1 Hz or 2 Hz is very difficult. So we show that log normal distribution gives one solution to that. So what we did, this is done by Junosuke, and he moves to Osaka University. And so very simple. So we have a 10,000 of excitatory neurons, integrate and fire neurons, and 2,000 of inhibitory integrate and fire neurons. And these excitatory cells are connected by excited question, of course, but the weight distribution, conductance distribution of a log normal distribution taken from experimental data. And others are just uniform or random or whatever. Essentially, nothing changes if you use random connections or uniform connections. But the connectivity is here about 10%. Basically, everything is about 10%. Yeah. And this is a simulation results. Yeah. And one thing I want to say is this network doesn't receive any external input. So all activity occurs autonomously. So do you agree this looks very irregular? There's no strong synchronized activity. And so firing rate distribution of these excitatory cell, that one looks like this. So average is around 1 Hz. And it's very similar to, so this is data from auditory cortex from Zeta's group. And it looks actually very similar. So here is 20 Hz. This model also shows tails up to 20 Hz. And the coefficient CV value also is peaked around 1. So most of the neurons shows very irregular Poisson-like activity. And some shows a little bit bursting and like this. Yeah. So the characteristics, spike statistics of this model actually well coincide with what you really observe in neocortex. So how this?
I'm trying to understand the role of the log normal distribution. So if I took your same simulation scenario and I drew the excitatory to excitatory connections just from a normal distribution instead of
long
normal. What would be the differences in what
you observe? So, it is so anything activity it is very difficult to generate spontaneous activity below 10 Hz with normal distribution. We checked, I do not have slide now, but there is a parameter range to produce spontaneous activity of 10 Hz but with normal distribution, but this parameter range is extremely small, extremely narrow. But here, there is at least some finite parameter range.
What's the frequency that you see in the
inhibitory cells?
Yes.
Yeah, inhibitory cells is around 15 Hz. Yeah. And actually, it shows some kind of oscillation. The range is gamma.
If you look at the population activity of the pyramidal cells, you don't see the same oscillation?
No.
Just lambda?
Okay. Almost. Yeah, I cannot detect. From
so you get some sort of Inga gamma. Interneuron generation.
Yeah. And for stability, actually, one crucial point is so delay, conduction delay of synaptic inputs are important. Yeah, it is always often useful if inhibition comes slightly later than
I forgot about it.
Yeah. So what is happening? Actually, in short, basically, only strong weights propagate spike sequence reliably, but other weak inputs. So many synapses are actually weak, only some are strong, but weak inputs generate noise to assist the propagation by strong inputs. That is the story. And so each neuron is receiving a lot of input, but only 10 synapses. Each neuron has 1,000 synapses in our simulation, but 10 synapses are, roughly speaking, very strong. Others are not very strong. And these spikes propagating through these strong synapses actually is transmitted reliably. And because of that, so if you observe membrane potential fluctuation, membrane potential of neuron, then this neuron shows very large input fluctuations. Here the resting state is minus 70, spike threshold is minus 50, and because of input from many, many noisy, weak synapses, so average membrane potentials comes around minus 60. Okay. But these large fluctuations are generated by input from strong synapses. And it occasionally generates spike. Yeah. And this is a mechanism to keep stable low frequency firing. And this is for inhibitory cells. Basically same, but similar tendency, but the firing rates are larger. And in physics terminology, it is called stochastic resonance. Yeah. So what we here do is we pick up one of the new excitatory cells of the network. Then we measure the cross correlation, in other words, mutual information between inputs from strong synapses and output spikes. If correlation is higher, basically these spike inputs are phase-free transmitted. And we change the average membrane potential of this cell by changing the firing rates, mean firing rates of it to each synapses. Okay. So here you see cross correlation. So for the strongest synapses is maximized when membrane potential is around minus 60 millivolt, just in between two resting potential and spike threshold. Then for the second largest synapses, it is maximized, but somewhere slightly different. But this is for third strongest synapses. Yeah, so like this. Synaptic inputs to strongest synapses are kind of transmitted optimally when membrane potential is around minus 60. And how this, so as you see already, this actually happened for in this model. So membrane potential average is around minus 60 millivolt, and that is generated by many, many other input from weak synapses.
In your model, where did noise come from? Is it deterministic chaos? Do you have other source of noise in the model?
Ah, noise is purely generated by intrinsic dynamics, circuit dynamics.
So it's deterministic?
It's, yeah, in that sense it's deterministic, but I think we have, this network state is very close to critical state, we believe.
Really?
So-called critical states. Kind of, so excitation and infusion is finely balanced to keep response kind of very chaotic. But we still have, yeah, we have no rigorous proof of that, for that. But anyway, it's a, so this is, not, so we tested whether this kind of behavior is observed in real cortical neuron by dynamic ground, and we observe some reverse U function shape here. But anyway, maybe this is interesting because noise are generated internally. Yeah. So I show you some picture, Big Ben. And visual, that shows that the visual processing uses noise nicely. But that noise is added from by us. From, yeah, we put noise on the picture of Big Bang and to generate kind of stochastic resonance effect. And my, this, the message of this model is actually brain is generated noise internally to optimize spike transmission, right? And this explains also sequence. Yeah. So because there are strong synapses, you can trace how spike propagates these strong synaptic pathway, right? We know where strong synapses exist in my model. So this is the example, for instance. This appears after some here, and well, this blue one appears somewhere here, and this magenta one appears here. And so actually, if you observe single neuron activity and population activity, then they look very irregular. But actually, this activity, asynchronous activity, is a collection of sequence. But interesting point is this sequence is not very stereotyped. For instance, here, this sequence appears, I mean, the length of sequence changes depending on, from time to time. Although we didn't quantify it, but actually, we consider, I mean, sequence is slow if activity of entire network is a little lower, but if activity of network is higher, then sequence will be accelerated. But anyway, it is repeated. And sometimes sequence is branches, and or sometimes it's merges. And this is a response to external input. If this sequence can be used for encoding external stimulus, we have to have a kind of deterministic response.
So, how do you identify sequences?
Here it's extremely simple because we know synaptic connections. Okay. We just trace strong synapses, just the strongest synapses. Yeah, or maybe second strongest.
And why do you say that the noisy state consists of many spike sequences? Do you have a quantification of how many spikes actually are accounted for by sequences as opposed to isolated?
Yeah. So this sequence, Actually, if there is no sequence, network doesn't fire, doesn't show any activity.
Okay.
Yeah. This versus activity spike of this neuron, let's say this neuron, propagates through strong synapses to this neuron. But it's also propagate, I mean, send spikes to other neurons. But these spikes, synapses are very weak. So it's just contributed noise.
Okay, so this is a theoretical argument.
Yeah, theoretical argument. Okay. But without sequence, there's no ongoing activity at all in the network. Therefore, sequence is not separable from irregular firing.
So are you just seeing some representatives from cell assemblies when you see these sequences?
I have not analyzed. I expect at least some, just few synapses, few spikes might be coincidentally arriving at each neuron. But we are not analyzing that. Yeah. But we introduce purposely kind of clusters of neurons to explain. So this connectivity is random, but you can introduce clustering in synaptic connection. Then what you observe is spontaneous activity like this, and also persistent activity of cluster. If clusters receive some external input, then these neuron sets can generate higher activity, like 10 hertz, 20 hertz, while others still show spontaneous activity.
Yeah. And the length of your sequences is of the order of what?
Yeah, so about, I think most maximum we trace is around 10, because random connectivity is random, but even for strongest synapses, coherence is not one, right? So transmission is basically probabilistic. So lifetime of sequence is at maximum here, 10. But actually, we do not have show, but you can generate log normal distribution by spike time independent plasticity very easily. I mean, if
you have that published?
I published. Ah, you don't know. Ah, sorry. Well, that's life.
Hi. So, what fraction of these spikes generated by the first neuron in the sequence?
Sorry,
what?
0.857.
So, what fraction of the time when it fires will it lead to the generation of the sequence?
I see. I have not quantified, but from this sequence, I expect, so this is 3 seconds, so very low, maybe every 1 or 2 seconds, I think.
And it was firing at about
2 or 3 hertz? Okay, yeah. So average firing rate is around 1 hertz. So, and if one, because all neuron has strong synapses, therefore, each neuron contributes to some sequence, at least more than 1 hertz. Because maybe second strongest synapses and third strongest synapses, they might also contribute to sequence. So,
when you generated the network, how did you decide on the connectivity again? So each neuron is connected on average to how many neurons?
So each neuron is connected about 10% of other neurons,
randomly. And then
but
you assign stress to those connections by drawing from your log normal.
Yeah, right. Okay. So each neuron has identical log normal distribution of synapses.
So for each synapsis is drawn from the same log normal distribution
in the cytokine
connection.
Right.
And then why do you say that every neuron will have at least one strong synapse?
On average, I mean.
Okay.
Because I'm using the same.
Okay.
Yeah.
And out of 10,000 neurons that you have, how many sequences do you see?
About how many? Sorry, many. I can say only many. this is just an example. of course. Basically, if you write all the sequences, you cannot see anything. I mean, just lines, full of lines. Yeah.
So I mean, about how many sequences do you see per 10,000 neurons? I mean, 10, 100? I was just wondering.
I think, roughly speaking, so one neuron, each neuron has 10, maybe five strong synapses. Five strongest synapses can contribute to sequence. Therefore, so how many? I don't know. Yeah, and each synapses will trigger different sequences. So I think I should say 10,000 raised to 5.
And different sequences occur at different rates?
I think so. Yeah, because finding rate distribution also is log normal. Yeah. So some neurons fire much more compared to others. And I think these sequences can be used for learning. But anyway, so this is summary. Thank you very much.
Thank you.